It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me.
And then who locked you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Guys, not creeps.
You're on a tight ship.
Except it's a U-boat.
You don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to know that you don't fuck around in a skinhead bar.
Yeah, well,
especially when you've got hair on your fucking head.
Yeah.
Now we're all in the stew. For an impulsive act. For a selfish act. Under my roof.
Yeah, slick and calculated, this guy.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's been the head of this dragon for quite some time.
We're not ready.
What do you think they're doing out there?
That's just it. We don't know.
We fucking know they mean us harm.
Almost every time this movie gives you a slight glimmer of hope, it's almost immediately dashed out.
You're killing us. Kick the gun!
Oh, hold on.
The door, no! No!
Yeah, a lot of surprise brutality on this. Their numbers dwindle rather quickly.
Oh yeah.
Okay! Yeah!
Nobody feels any compunction about killing Nazis.
No. I don't know.
This will be over soon, gentlemen.
What? I can't hear anything. I turn that fucking shit down.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Horror 101 Show. Horror 101 Show. Educating your fears. Nazi skinheads fucking die. Horror 101 Show.
Would you believe it? After 5 years, we've come to our 55th show.
Shiggity swell, shrifty fat. Shiggity swat, shiggity fat. Shiggity, shiggity swell, shrifty fat. Shiggity swatity swell, shrifty fat. Girlfriend's age, shrifty fat. My IQ, shrifty fat. You must pay.
5 plus 5 is 50, 50, 50. 50th show. Yeah, 55th show. Yeah, 55th show.
Shiggity swatity swell.
Motherfucking show. What do we have for you on this 55th show?
How about Patrick Stewart, excuse me, Sir Patrick Stewart, and his first horror flick since Tobe Hooper's Life Force? There's a new director in town, and somehow this talented lad and his team convinced Mr. Stewart to play the lead villain in his latest film. This is Professor X. This is Captain fucking Picard we're talking about here. Now, playing a cool-headed, vicious, evil skinhead faction leader. We had to jump all over this one. It stars the recently deceased Anton Yelchin. Lots of buzz about this film. The world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, and myself are going to give the Horror 101 treatment to Jeremy Saulnier's The Green Room. But before we do, it took 54 shows before a listener took the time to reach out and just shit all over us. Thanks to our last show, The Conjuring of the Two.
So burn!
We got flame mail off our last read. We saw that coming, though.
It took 5 years and 54 shows before we got our first hate mail.
We knew that people weren't going to be overly fond with our negative review of Conjuring 2. We knew this. We warned people this was probably going to happen. We've seen, you know, Rotten Tomatoes and its more than popular review of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. I was comparing it last night to The Changeling and just how it fails in every conceivable way as a haunted house movie. It breaks rules that shouldn't be broken. Very convoluted. Nothing gets explained. It's unsatisfactory. I think the movie failed on paper before they ever rolled the cameras.
Nick seems to think this guy's a troll. I never heard from this guy ever before in my life, but he's like long-time listener. Your last 6 to 8 shows really turned me off,
And he's like, yeah, I'm confused. Who's the students to this Horror 101? Is it you guys? Is it your listeners? I'm confused. I'm like, if you're a long-time listener, then you fucking know what this show's about.
I get the feeling he's confused a lot.
I'm picturing this guy bitching at his car about us on the way home or something like that. And it gave me a chuckle. He pissed on us for talking about a movie that we didn't see. At no point was that the fact. There's a small discussion before we watch it, but most of the discussion is after we watch the movie. So at no point, especially during The Conjuring of the Two, did anybody say anything about any movie before watching it. And then he's pissing, he's like, well, how can you love a movie that's filled with CGI, but you piss on another movie for the same reason? And he's like, The Swarm of Birds. I'm like, The Swarm of Birds
had it's like a 10-second shot.
Not even 10.
Yeah.
And the other part was the sheet. When she's doing the laundry upside, the sheet flies out of her hand and it gets stuck into a CGI form of something before it blows away. I'm like, that hardly constitutes half the fucking film, man. None of the makeup in that movie was CGI. The girl being dragged around by her fucking hair, besides the hair float behind her head, she's actually flying around. None of that was CGI. He's like, how dare you not know everything that James Wan directed? Sorry, I forgot he directed Saw in 03. Oh my god, we didn't mention his Fast and Furious career. Big fucking deal. Oh, you gotta consult your Oracle.
He was ripping on us for checking IMDb. I'm like, I'm sorry. I haven't memorized the entire thing yet. I'm sorry.
But in the end, I'm like, you know what? Sorry you've become disillusioned with the show, but please keep in mind that the Horror 101 show has exits at both the front and the rear. Feel free to pick one. Get the fuck out if you don't like it.
Please let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
And saying that, we shall move on. And gentlemen, I know we were throwing around a couple of different ideas. Brian Stewart, you've been talking about magic. I know you wanted to do magic for the longest time.
It's going to be a good show,
time.
I think.
And we will get to magic, but it will not be this evening.
It'll be a hidden gem for Hopkins fans, because I love Anthony Hopkins. I think he's great. I love almost everything he's ever done, with the exception of Road to Wellville and maybe a few others.
I say that's an underrated gem, sir.
Oh, dear God. but also, it's a Sir Richard Attenborough film, which is great. So it's a hidden gem for a lot of reasons. And not all horror films have to be about the Gru. And I know that's your wheelhouse. You like good Gru.
I posted a picture from Warlock, and one of our listeners, Lori, she posted, like, you're doing Warlock's my favorite movie ever! I'm like, maybe. We could be.
Because, you know what, that's a show we could have talked about with Essential Sequels, because we never talked about Warlock 2, The Armageddon, which was another show that was superior to the original.
Yep, Anthony Hancock, and I also suggested Waxwork, which was the first Anthony Hancock movie that I had ever seen. I really enjoyed it, with Zach Galligan from Gremlins. What I've decided on, gentlemen, and I hope you go along with me for this ride, because I'm kind of interested in this. There's been a big buzz about this film, but it didn't really get a wide release. And that kind of bothers me, but there's a whole bunch of reasons why this movie will probably appeal to us. First of all, the main villain is Patrick Stewart.
Ooh, we're doing conspiracy theory.
No.
Oh. Conspiracy theory is awesome. It's Richard Donner, for crying out loud.
No. And this film is one of the last films that we'll get from the recently deceased Anton Yelchin.
Ooh. Oh, what's your Green Room?
Green Room.
All right. I like this.
It's been a big buzz about this movie, and from what I hear, the less you know about it going into it, the better the experience of watching it is. So, I didn't read any spoilers. All I know is that this is unlike anything Patrick Stewart's done before. I read one piece of trivia on it just recently, where apparently Patrick Stewart, I guess he was home alone in England when he got the script. And the script scared him so badly that he locked all his doors, engaged his alarm system, poured himself a scotch, and he's like, I'm doing this film. I'm doing this character. This is what he said in an interview. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, the premise of it is something I've seen before. It sounds a lot to me like a film I watched a couple years back called Frontiers. Frontiers was a French thriller / horror about these urban punks chancing upon these rural, really fucked up neo-Nazis.
Okay.
And it was very violent, the kind of violence that you would expect from French cinema, because ever since High Tension, French cinema has just been fucking stupid with Martyrs and Frontiers and Inside, some really graphic, disturbing films coming out of France the last decade. So I'm like, okay, let's give it a shot.
You can't keep us here, and you gotta let us go.
We're not keeping you, you're just staying.
We're so fucking dead, guys.
What do we do?
Oh, shit.
Careful now.
I can't die here.
So don't.
It's fucking hard, man.
Let's get this out of the way now. We enjoyed this film immensely. It is a tale about survival of the most pure and brutal form. We begin with Anton Yelchin. He plays Pat, the lead guitar player in a four-person punk band called The Ain't Rights. As in, these people, there's something wrong with them, they ain't right. The four of them are on a kind of rickety tour through Oregon. Poor people have to siphon gas to get from gig to gig. They barely have a nickel to rub together between the four of them.
Okay, I'm with the Ain't Rights from Washington, D.C.
Technically, we're from Arlington.
Nice. And this is for Seaside HCFM. You guys are hard to find. Want no social media presence?
When you take it all virtual, you lose the texture.
What do you mean, texture?
Just, you gotta be there. Music is for effect. It's time and aggression.
Technical wizardry.
And it's shared live. And then it's over. The energy can't last.
When he's talking during the interview about his philosophy on music, it reminded me so much of The Commitments. It was awesome about how you had to be there live in the moment to capture the energy, and then it leaves, right? You have to... it should be performed live. No social media in the moment. I also kind of feel bad for them, because they're doing something they love and they have to do it in wherever place they can, even the most, you know, despicable of places, right?
Apparently in the Pacific Northwest, you know, there ain't much punk scene unless it's the skinheads.
Yeah.
All right, so, all set. Matinee tomorrow, doors at 1, you guys are on at 3. And, just so you know, it's mostly boots and braces down there.
Skins is some at every show.
What, DMS, Sharp?
Right wing, or technically ultra left, but not affiliated.
Are your cousins cool?
Yeah, yeah. Don't talk politics, but stick with Daniel. I tag along, but he and his girl are coming here to crash. Got a vacuum and shit.
So they're not like burning crosses or anything, right? Like we just play rock?
I'd play earlier stuff, heavier stuff.
They know their audiences. They know the places they typically play, because they talk about the kind of political atmosphere of each one. You know, where are these guys at? Well, these guys are
far right or ultra left.
Yeah.
They're so far left, they've looped back right again.
These people have just been booked for a gig that they'll never forget.
The cinematography is really quite beautiful, and I'm glad we get some of those exterior shots before we get to the club, so we get a sense of freedom and, you know, kind of young rebellion and kids at the prime of life having fun and doing what they love, and then they get trapped in this dark place, you know.
Well, yeah, it's like they're in the middle of the Pacific Northwest. You know, they try to show how isolated they are. They're far away from civilization.
Yeah. But, I mean, also to give us some sense of contrast, if the movie was constantly shot at night and dark the whole way through, it wouldn't feel quite as oppressive. Oh, but we get those open, wide vista shots and panoramic views of them driving down the highway, so that when we get to that dark, cramped little club they're in, we really do feel trapped.
And the beginning helicopter shot you mentioned give you the Shining feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of the bird's eye view of the vehicle on its way to something bad that's going to happen. We already know this, but that's the view that they gave us.
The funny thing is now, is back in the day when they were doing those shots, like when Kubrick was doing that, you know, you needed a helicopter with a rig and all that. Nowadays, you can do that shit with a drone and a decent camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stage to rest in here. Don't block the hallway. The owner doesn't fuck around with the fire code. Sound check in 15, you're on in 20.
Got it.
These guys not creeps?
We're on a tight ship.
Except it's a U-boat.
Hey, yo. I got a dumb idea.
Okay, no religious code. Don't mistake it for yourself. It ain't hardcore, this is spiky hair. But the jab still lives inside your head. Nazi punks, Nazi punks, Nazi punks. Fuck off. Nazi punks, Nazi punks, Nazi punks. Fuck off.
I like all the little, you know, band things that kind of endear us to them, and they show they have a sense of history, like, oh, you fell asleep first, or
yeah.
What the joke they play at the beginning, basically a song to say, fuck all skinheads, and it's like, you back out of this, I'm going to tell them you're Jewish.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, they do it as a dare. Like, all these things makes us feel like this is a band that's been around together for a while without overselling it.
I don't think playing fuck off skinheads is the best song to open with at a skinhead bar out in the middle of the fucking sticks.
But it's the kind of thing I could see them going themselves into, but it also shows them just how horribly unaware they are of the real danger, right, who they're dealing with.
Well, I mean, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to know that you don't fuck around in a skinhead bar.
Yeah, well,
especially
for sure.
When you've got hair on your fucking head.
Yeah.
Thank you, that was a cover.
From this point, we're going to get a little vague in our discussion. For a change, most of you haven't seen the film we're covering. We want to keep the spoilers to a minimum. The green room is where the band gets ready for their sets. And just before Ain't Right leaves the club, they witness something in there. And that's when things turn to shit.
Who else knows besides, you said Daniel's cousin?
Tad. There's a text from him last night with our address, but he doesn't know anything.
Except who they are, where they are. Maybe where they're supposed to be next.
Fuck.
Now we're all in the stew. For an impulsive act. For a selfish act. Under my roof.
You almost think he's a lawyer, the way he's negotiating through the door early on. When he says, look, our only concern is that there's an unregistered weapon. I needed to get it out of here. It's like he's talking about the legality of it, you know, he's looking at it as somebody who's more details-oriented than you would expect for a head of a group of neo-Nazis, right?
Gentlemen, I hope you appreciate the situation. Things have gone south, no doubt. But you know, if you don't hand over that gun, it won't end well. You see, for all I know, I come to my place of business, and there is an out-of-town band locked in a room with an unregistered firearm.
Oh, come on!
There. And I maybe there's a hostage, too. So what do I do? Am I within my rights to intervene? Should I kick down the door and start shooting? Or can we just remove the guns from the equation? These are my questions. You got 30 seconds to answer.
I was really worried that it was going to be 90 minutes of that, you know, negotiation through the door, because that was a large part of the setup. Because it gets to the problem very quickly, and then there's a pause moment where it's a lot of negotiation with Patrick Stewart, and I thought, okay, is this the whole film? And thankfully it is not. That's about half the film. And the second half is an entirely other movie. But yeah, wow.
You're killing us. Keep the gun!
No, hold on. The door, no. No. Open the door! Fuck off! Hold it!
No!
Okay, okay!
No. Okay!
Okay!
Okay! Yeah!
Okay. No.
And as soon as she sees those red laces,
she knows that
she knows, but by then it's too late, his hand's out, and just as soon as that arm comes back in, because you don't know what you're gonna expect. Up until this point. You know, it's pretty tame. As soon as you see that arm come back into the room, you're like, okay, this is the ride I'm taking.
Yeah.
And it doesn't disappoint from
up to then, it was merely a thriller.
Exactly.
It was a suspense thriller. The second we got that arm hacked into absolute fucking mincemeat, from that point on, it was an entirely different kind of movie. The tone changes to one that's much more severe.
This will be over soon, gentlemen.
What I like is that through all of the worst of the bloodletting, through all the violence, everything that happens to the characters, it's always offset by the counterpoint of just how calm, patient, and reserved Patrick Stewart is during the worst of it.
What happened?
Oh, a bit of a maelstrom tonight. Visiting band hurt one of ours.
What the fuck are we doing then? Let's get in there.
We're not coming apart, is what we are doing. We're saving questions until this pig fuckers transferred offsite.
Darcy.
Okay. Last chance. If anyone needs to take a leak.
Yeah, slick and calculated, this guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, obviously he's been the head of this dragon for quite some time. He walks in all smooth. We need this. We need a door with frame. We need a cleaning crew. We need dogs. We need red laces. We got to do this particular.
Almost gives you the sense that something like this has happened before. Like he's
right.
Yeah,
he's got contingencies for most things.
It's like he's got the mind of a cleaner. You get the dogs. You get the guns. You knives only. You make it so.
I'm done. Okay, you can close the door behind me if you want to strategize.
We're not ready.
What do you think they're doing out there?
That's just it. We don't know.
We fucking know they mean us harm.
It's just if they have guns. Okay, why haven't they mowed us down
already?
We
can't just go missing. They need us found.
I was surprised that they actually left the room early in the movie. I thought at the very least they'd be held up in there for a long time before they got a chance to get out, or if when they did get out, that would be their main break.
It defies the usual convention. Normally, that's the way these movies play out.
Like
there's the claustrophobia scene, there's the trap, and then at the end, there's like the rush to freedom, and you know, there's like the one big push at the end to get out. Whereas this is like, we're gonna do it. No, we're not. No, we're not. It's like Monty Python. Run away! Run away!
Here we go.
How many exits are there?
The main, the back, maybe the kitchen.
What about windows?
See for yourselves.
Yeah, a lot of surprise brutality in this. Their numbers dwindle rather quickly.
Every time they make a break for it,
you know,
one or two are going down.
Like at one point, somebody even says, "Maybe we should split up." It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, totally, we should split up. That's exactly what we should do.
It's the gas making them think that, though. Oh, no, that's cabin in the woods.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, like, the bad decisions. Okay, shit's going south. The one guy, instead of, which one was it? Reese. Instead of, you know, retreating with everybody else, he sees the window and runs out and just is immediately gagged.
Oh, he's meat cleavered.
You breathing?
A little bit, yeah.
Let him bleed. Later is better for time of death.
Because if they kill him too soon, and this takes longer than anticipated, the story doesn't match. I mean, like, even to that point, he's meticulous. I mean, it's really cold. We didn't expect it to be quite this gory, I don't think.
I knew there was violence. Some good bloodletting.
Yeah,
some, really, some
deep
good
gouges,
some box cutter action,
and some evisceration with dogs. But that was pretty brutal. Some really taut, riveting moments. Really quite suspenseful, especially when you see almost every time this movie gives you a slight glimmer of hope, it's almost immediately dashed out.
And there's something we don't.
Good. What?
I don't know where we keep.
You know what? The big surprise moment for me, and it's going to be a spoiler now, everyone's going to be looking for it, and I don't want to give too much away, but there is that ray of hope when there's a turncoat that says he's going to get them out. And he goes, I know something you don't, and I won't follow up with the rest of that. Just anyone watching, when you hear those words, know that was my favorite scene.
Just to explain, there is a Samuel L. Jackson in Deep Blue Sea moment in this movie.
It was really good, and I didn't see it coming, and they did not disappoint, and it was... then the violence, really well done, I thought, too, in that moment. Took me by surprise, and it was so good, too, because it wasn't dragged out, false hope. They dash it almost immediately. Like, it's like, oh, they have a... Oh, no, there's no chance there. Nope, no. But that was probably my favorite moment, like, specific moment.
Hey, down there, dipshit fashion punk clown motherfuckers!
Turn around!
Shazbot!
What? Who is that?
Odin himself.
Okay, that's it. That's enough. We're not saying anything else about this film. We've already said enough. If you want to know what happens, you got to watch the film. You want to know who lives, who dies, who will survive, and what will be left of them? You see what I did there? You want to know? Get the fucking movie. It's on Blu-ray now. Grab it. And keep in mind, this will be one of the last films you'll see with Anton Yelchin.
Stupidest way to die since The Crocodile Hunter.
He's gone, crushed by his own vehicle. What are the details? Do you guys know?
He was trying to get his mail. He was trying to hop out of his Jeep to get the mail out of the mailbox. That's what
in a Jeep Grand Cherokee, and there's this big deal about the recall that they're doing on the shifter in those models. Because unlike a regular one where you shift it into gear, you let it go, it stays in that gear. It's got the marker indicator to see. These ones were spring-loaded. So basically, like, you popped it down, and then it shot back up to a central position.
Right.
So he thought it was in park. It was actually in neutral. So he got out, went to go do what he was going to do. The vehicle rolled back and pinned him.
Oh. Yeah. And Anton's not a very large gentleman.
No.
I'm certain it didn't take much to crush the life out of him. What a horrible way to go. I mean, he's got another Star Trek movie coming out that he'll be in, and that'll pretty much be it for him, I'm certain. If you look on IMDb, he's got post-production on a few projects. The only thing that doesn't have red script next to it, the latest, is this Green Room.
Yep.
Yeah. Here we are.
Stewart, score it.
I would have to say this is a solid 9 for me. It's a good thriller, well done gore effects, a intelligent, smart adversary in Patrick Stewart. Doesn't overstay its welcome. The cinematography is great. I like the dimly lit club atmosphere. I don't know. I like the characters, and I thought it was a well put together, like I say, claustrophobic thriller with good attention to detail.
I can get us out of here.
Wow, a conspiracy.
No, just a clusterfuck.
Cult sensation?
I did like it. I did really like it. I feel like I need to take a shower after watching it.
It's like watching a Terry Gilliam movie.
A little bit, yeah. Like, it just...
it crawls on your skin while you're watching.
It kind of puts you through a ringer, but... sometimes you just like watching stupid people make bad decisions, because you're like, oh, I would do that! Oh, okay, no, that didn't work out. No, like, the acting was solid. I like the fact that aside from Patrick Stewart and Anton Yelchin, most people were not established. I do like movies like that, you know, where it's not like, you know, the names kind of detract from it. It just seems more authentic when it's people you don't know.
Right.
Almost gives it, like, a documentary quality. I'm going to give it an 8.
Disregard. Just shoot who's left. They don't have to be accounted for. Forensics is no longer a concern.
I would probably give it an 8 as well. I enjoyed it. There's great suspense, and of course, I'm always a sucker for a one-setting movie. And what does the Green Room give you? I mean, there's big, wide, open spaces at the beginning of the film, and then all of a sudden you're into this club, so you're brought in a little bit, and it's claustrophobic just walking into that club with all those people in there. And then they're on the stage, and it's a little bit more claustrophobic because people aren't liking their music at first, and they're throwing beer bottles at them. And then get trapped into that room where shit's hit the fan, and now they're stuck in there. And the movie is one day, you know?
Yeah.
It's like one evening. It's just an evening of hell, and you're along for the ride with these people, and you don't know exactly. You know, I was watching this movie, and I'm thinking to myself, if everybody dies, I would accept that. You know what I mean? I'm not going to spoil who lives and who dies, but if everybody was to fucking be dead at the end of this movie, I would have still enjoyed it.
Nobody gets away unscathed in this movie. There are no clean survivors here.
Again, much like Indiana Jones, nobody feels any compunction about killing Nazis.
No, not at all.
This is Jeremy Saunier, writer and director of Green Room. Please see the film. It's a real thrill.
Folks, before we go, we're going to review some horror literature for you for the first time ever on this show. Horror 101 was contacted by author Nathaniel Munn, and a very own nude agreed to read his book and give you her thoughts on it.
This is a book. It's called Shadows by N.L. Munn. I've never heard of him before until he contacted Horror 101 and wanted us to review a book for him. So I did read the book. There are four different types, four short stories. Like, the first one is Shadows, which is the namesake of the book. The second short story is called Sin Eaters. Third one is Helsinki, Hell's Hammer, and the third one is Grand Opening. Again, four different stories, but all the same common factor, the having to do with hell and our perception of what we think hell is and heaven is. And it's actually quite interesting, and it was a good read.
Is it violent? Is it brutal?
Very violent, very brutal. Obviously not for children. Very descriptive, and a lot of his explanations and the brutality that people, or even not always people, whatever the character has endured, it's terrifying.
Do you think our listeners should pick up his book?
I think you should. He's actually listed on Amazon. I think he gave us the details there.
Yep.
So if you go to Amazon, either .com, UK, US, you can find them there. So again, it's Shadows by N.L. Munn. Nathaniel is the first name. And yeah, check it out.
And there you have it, folks. It's nude approved. Grab Nathaniel's Shadows from Amazon and be sure to pick up your copy of Jeremy Saulnier's Green Room. It's out on Blu-ray now, starring Anton Yelchin, Patrick Stewart, and Imogen Poots. You won't be disappointed. That is the end of the show. We hope you enjoyed it. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, and my lovely wife, the nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
Shut up about eating Mike.
You will see it eventually.
I have the talking stick. Make it the show. All right,
all right.